Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Now I'm joined in the studio by the Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue. You're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire. Good morning.
So we're grappling with this new phase now, a return to normal life, or new normal as it's being called, and the challenge is to keep the virus under control as we restart many activities. But there doesn't appear to be a plan B, or we haven't heard about what the bar is if we need to reverse back. If a new variant emerges, for example, which we'll be hearing about later on, there's a possibility of that happening. Why haven't we had that plan outlined to us?
The plan that was announced by the government yesterday is a bridge to a better future than we are at the moment, building on the progress that we've made, particularly with our vaccination programme. In relation to plan B or plan C, to directly answer your question, one of the many things that we have learned from dealing with this awful disease is it is difficult to lay out the exact detail of contingency plans because this is a disease that is unpredictable. But what the government has said is that we will review where we are, particularly in the second half of September. And it is always open to the government, but I hope we don't have to do this, to make changes in our public health guidance if the health circumstances merit it. The criteria that we will look at doing for that will of course be community transmission, but then more particularly, what is the impact of that on our acute hospital system?
So is there a level at which you will say we need to apply the brakes now?
So is there an exact figure in relation to what level that could be? In relation to the community transmission level, what we've looked at in the past, which I imagine we'll continue to look at the future, is not just the level of community transmission that we have, but the projection as to what could happen. And if we were to see a prediction regarding, you know, accelerated growth in the second half of September, that of course could have an impact on decisions that we make. In relation to where we are with the impact on our hospital system, we now have just over 300 ICU beds within our country. Thankfully, a low portion of those are being used at the moment for dealing with COVID. But of course, every bed that has been used does relate to somebody in our country who's very sick. The available bed capacity, though I hope we never have to get to this point again, is of course something the government will have to monitor constantly.
Okay. Did you discuss, though, at your subcommittee meeting earlier in the week, whether it would be useful for all of us, for the public, to have a framework as we move into this period of time where we're taking personal responsibility now, where we could say, right, the brakes will be put on if we're not careful here, that there needs to be parameters there. Did you have that conversation?
Yes, we did. But as I answer that, I would make the point that I believe personal responsibility has always been at the core of this. I believe in the extraordinary efforts the Irish people have made to suppress and beat COVID, that at the heart of it isn't just asking our citizens to obey the law. It's the reality that the overwhelming majority of people have exercised personal responsibility already in obeying public health guidance. So I would, I think, make the point that the mix of needs, of incentives to follow the guidance is simply changing, that we're going to put more focus on personal responsibility. But to me, responsibility has always been at the heart of the progress we've made. And then to answer your question then about, you know, have we discussed if we would need to vary, take a step back? Again, to emphasise, I really hope we're not going to get to that point. But the very reason why we do have review points in our plan, particularly when we understand what is the effect of return to school on community transmission, given the Delta variant, the reason why we have those review points is particularly to recognise the fact that we do have to monitor this as we go along, as has always been the case.
And of course, public transport up to full capacity from today. The Minister for Health this morning on Morning Ireland saying that that was something that Eamon Ryan wanted. I wonder, did the CMO have anything to say about doing that in the same week as the schools are opening?
Well, I think this is a point that's just worth developing slightly, because even though the capacity is there for 100%, the expectation of the government is that that is going to be taken up over time. So it's already the case that our buses and our Lewises and our trains are busier today than they would have been a few days ago. Mm-hmm. That is the case. But in order to get up to 100% and to approach that capacity, I believe that is going to take time before we get to that point.
So what was the advice, though, that the government had on that, or that the subcommittee had from the CMO?
Well, my recollection is that the advice that we had did not cover particular guidance in relation to public transport.
They said nothing about it.
But the reason why the government had to make the decision to allow capacity was then in the context of at a point in the future, beginning to get ready to go back to the office. That capacity would have to be in place to do
it. I think everybody welcomes that things are opening up. I mean, there's a great sense of relief, but there are concerns expressed by many medical experts that in the very same week that the schools are opening fully, there is full capacity on public transport. And people are asking, why wasn't there a delay, say, of 2 weeks between those two things happening?
But the reason why we decided to move to a return to the office for the second half of September was to begin the return to the office in the second half of September, was to sequence that. It's probably the case that the two biggest injections of movement that we're going to have in our society across the coming months will be first be the return to school, which we have experience of before, and the second will be the return to the office, which will happen in a phased way over many months. The particular reason why that is then sequenced for the latter half of September is to give space between both of those taking place. And that is in recognition of the concern that the government does share that doing a lot at one point will significantly increase risk. And the concerns that are being articulated, and indeed the concerns that many people do have, given the awful trauma of the nearly year and a half of COVID, we understand that as a government.
So the CMO wasn't concerned about what you're doing right now with public transport and schools in the same week?
The last thing I can do or would want to do is speak on behalf of Dr. Houlihan. It's up to Dr. Houlihan, and I'm sure he will, to offer a view in relation to this. What I just want to reiterate is we are aware of the risks. That's why this has been done in a phased basis. And in particular, the reason why we are doing these, I hope, next set of decisions at three different points is in recognition that doing everything together would change the risk profile of our country.
And he's being moved back now, shifted back to where he was pre-pandemic. Fionnán Sheehan was here yesterday and said he'll become the man who tells you not to be smoking fags. So it'll be government now solely who will be making these decisions front and centre.
The government has always made the decision. And I've been on countless occasions not only involved in making the decisions, but of course, fulfilling my duty of explaining why we're making the decisions and accepting the consequences of them. So in fairness to NPHET and in fairness to the Chief Medical Officer, they give advice, they make the case for their advice, but ultimately it's the government who's always made the final decision. And in relation to what is going to happen with NPHET, any decisions in relation to that do await where we're going to be with the disease later on in October. And I all hope we're in a place that the prominence and the role that NPHET and our medical officers have needed, I hope that and expect that can recede if we get to a different place with the disease, which is what we're looking to do.
But when people report that NPHET is about to be disbanded, is that not true or true?
Well, what I believe what is true is as we move the management of this disease, I hope, into what being an ongoing feature of health crisis, an ongoing feature of our health policy, as opposed to the urgent crisis it has been, we can kind of mainstream and put NPHET into the normal ongoing public health advice that we get in relation to all health matters. That, I hope, is what is going to happen. So are the people who are involved in NPHET and the work they do, is that going to go away? I'd expect most of the people and all of the advice they're giving will still be there. But I'd expect it would be part of just the ongoing work that the Department of Health does.
I wanted to ask you briefly about the €35 million that the HSE spent on the ventilators that either didn't turn up or when they did turn up, they weren't working. Now, we know that everybody was in crisis mode at that moment, but it isn't it important to keep your head and not fall for, you know, scams? It's extraordinary that that amount of money, it seems, was wasted and is unrecoverable at this stage.
And you have to put that in the context of the time. I vividly remember the moments in which we were making the decisions about ventilators. We were dealing with a disease that the country, that not only our country, but health experts all over the world were struggling to deal with. We didn't have a vaccine at that point. our citizens were dying. We were trying to find ventilators to keep patients, to keep loved ones alive for longer or to save their lives. That's the context of that decision.
But we should be relying on people who can keep their heads in that situation. And that money was handed over to companies that the state had never dealt with before.
Well, Claire, if I look at the work that the HSE have done from a procurement point of view, the work they did in relation to PPEs and PPE equipment, and the work they did in increasing the supply that we had of ventilators at a time in which we needed it. They showed their mettle and their ability to get awfully difficult work done at a moment of national crisis. Did we get everything right at that point? Of course we didn't. But did our colleagues in the HSE and the people who were involved in procurement do all that could be done to get ventilators that we needed to keep our most vulnerable alive for longer? They did. And if we make the charge that not everything was done right at the time, it's a charge that will be made against me, and it'll be a charge that will be made against all of us that were involved in a moment at national crisis, and it's one I accept.
It's a significant amount of money, though. It's 35 million euros, Minister for Finance. I'm sure there's lots of things you could do with that now if you had it.
Of course there is, but I would equally look at the many tens and many hundreds of millions of euro the HSE used to source the vaccines that our country needed in scale and with speed. I look at the hundreds of millions of euro that the HSE used to put in place testing regimes, to put in place our vaccination programme. And that was money that they, the Department of Health and the government used and used well.
I want to ask you about the PUP, because the Taoiseach last night on Primetime said the exemption from the PUP reduction will apply or will be in the form of a special payment to people who can't get back to work. Can you just explain more to us about that at this stage?
The government will be, and particularly the Minister Humphreys and Minister Martin, will do further work in relation to all of this across the coming days. And outlined some plans in relation to it. The PUP was an emergency payment. We have now used 8 billion euro of our country's money to put it in place, but it was never envisaged it could be an ongoing feature of our social support system. So the changes to it will continue, and we will lay out any detail in relation to particular programmes that need to be put in place for a while. But the PUP and the wage subsidy scheme, which together we've invested 16 billion euro of our country's money in, they have worked. The PUP was a payment that was brought in that supported the income of our most vulnerable and the income of those who lost jobs due to no fault of their own at a time it was needed. And the employment wage subsidy scheme has protected our domestic economy. So these are supports that have worked, that we've been able to fund through an economy that grew.
And they will continue unreduced for people who cannot get back to work?
No, the pandemic unemployment payment is planned to be reduced.
For everybody?
For all who are on it at the moment. But we do accept and do know that there are some sectors that may be continue to be adversely affected for a short period of time in advance of October the 22nd. And for those particular sectors of new or slightly different arrangements need to be put in place, Minister Humphreys and Minister Martin will work on that.
They won't get the PUP, though, at its current rate?
Again, this is something that my colleagues in government will lay out details in relation to this. The decision will be made on that soon, but the plan for the overall reduction in the PUP will continue.
So the exemption from the PUP reduction would be in the form of a special payment for people who can't get back to work. That's what the Taoiseach said last night. Is that right or not?
Oh, the Taoiseach is right in relation to that, and it will apply to particular sectors.
But it will be at the reduced rate.
But again, as I said, Claire, this is a decision will be made in the coming days. The Minister for Social Protection will be able to give the detail in relation to it. We're now at a situation for the PUP that we had at one point over 600,000 people on it. We now have over 150,000 people on it and falling. It's a payment that's worked. It's a payment that fewer people are on.
It doesn't sound good that you're going to give it to people who can't get back to work beyond the date when it reduces. You're not going to give them the current rate.
As I said a moment ago, the detail of this will be communicated in the coming days that for those who are affected by it. But we're in the context here of a reopening plan for our economy that will see by October the 22nd, if we do deliver the plans that we are looking to deliver, we'll see our economy fully open again.
So there shouldn't be anybody who can't get back to work because of government restrictions.
I would certainly hope that by the middle of October, when and if we are in a position that we have removed the vast majority of our public health restrictions. The constraints that are there on all parts of our economy reopening at that point should be gone.
Okay. If you have to reverse that, though, what will happen to the PUP?
I think we need to take each step at a time. You've just asked me a whole set of questions earlier on just to find all the bridges that we're about to cross in the future. You know, if we get to a point that we have to go into reverse versus where we are at the moment and want to be in the future, we'll outline the government response to it at that point.
Okay.
But that is not what we are working to do. What we are working to do in continuing with our efforts to reduce the disease is have an economy, I hope, and a society that's open by the last half of October.
I want to move on because there's going to be a special standalone cabinet meeting to approve the new Housing for All plan at last. We've been waiting for this one. Did you have any hand in delaying that?
I did not, but I had an ongoing part in putting together the plan and did a huge amount of work by that with Dara O'Brien in relation to this, particularly
huge
before the summer.
There's going to be a huge spend here. And I saw reports this morning that went from 4 billion a year to 12 billion a year. Can you give us any idea how much will be spent on this?
All this will be confirmed on Thursday. The cabinet will be presented with the plan on Thursday afternoon, and at that point it will be agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, all of the figures will be outlined.
That level of spending that you have to factor in to your overall budget, it's a huge sum if it's between the 4 and the 12 per annum.
Well, we've already published our plans for the national finances up to 2025. And what we are looking to do is by 2023 get to a point that the only borrowing the country is doing at that point is for borrowing for investing in our future, such as in building new homes. So what we are looking to do is over the next two budgets in particular, as we move out of the emergency phase of this disease, is over those two budgets, reduce our borrowing significantly. So the time we get to 2023, the borrowing that we are doing at that point is for capital investment. And any of the decisions that I believe Cabinet will make on Thursday will be inside the framework that the government agreed before the summer.
Sounds like the budget isn't going to have too many goodies then this time or next time round.
Well, the budget will always try to make progress on things that we know are important for living standards and for supporting our country. A centrepiece of the budget will be decisions that we will be executing in relation to where we are with housing. But given everything that we've been through over the last 18 months, it's a hell of a move from where we are now to begin to think about goodies in the budget.
So these are two payback budgets.
These are budgets which for the next couple of years will look at how we can reduce the emergency borrowing that we have had in place. We have went through a period in which our country has economically done whatever it takes to in particular put in place a wage subsidy scheme and a pandemic unemployment payment that have worked. The supports that our country put in place economically have made a profound difference to the ability of our country to get through this crisis economically, but it's all borrowed money.
Mm-hmm.
We will need to reduce that borrowing and we will begin that work in the approaching budget. And that is laid out in the plan for our national finances that the government agreed to.
OK, the Catherine Zappone appointment controversy still making the headlines again this week. And the latest elements of the story is that Simon Coveney, the Foreign Affairs Minister, that he deleted a number of texts from the Tánaiste and Catherine Zappone in relation to the event that was held at the Merrion Hotel. Why does the story keep changing? Because he said he wasn't invited, then he was invited. He deleted the text, he said, because of a data concern on his phone, data capacity. Then it was because of a fear of being hacked. How do you explain all of this? What is going on?
Well, the Minister for Foreign Affairs was in front of an Oireachtas committee yesterday evening and he answered all of the questions in relation to this. And he acknowledged in the appointment process and in many of the issues that happened across that point, he and the government could have dealt with it differently. Simon Coveney and the work he has done for Minister for Foreign Affairs, he has represented our country extraordinarily well at the most difficult of times.
Okay. And nobody's questioning that. But do you, for example, delete text messages that you get from ministerial colleagues?
I keep most of the messages that come through to me. Sometimes I do delete texts if they come through, and I've dealt with them quickly. So it's a mix for me. I don't like to be in a position that my phone is always full of text messages that I have to respond back to. And when I deal with something, at times I do delete it, but I do keep many of the text messages that come through.
One of your cabinet colleagues, and this is really important for people, I think, as well, leaked the news about the Catherine Zappone appointment while the cabinet meeting was still in session. Do you see that as being a problem?
I believe it is exceptionally important that cabinet confidentiality is protected. I don't answer questions about what goes on in cabinet. And I am very careful about the answers I give in relation to it. But that is a matter for the Taoiseach and Tánaiste.
Mm. Well, it's a matter for all of you because you're all under suspicion. I mean, I could rightfully ask you now, was it you who leaked it?
And
you are about to say no, but do you understand what the problem is?
Of course I understand what the issue is here. I know there are allegations, and the case has been made that material did emit from cabinet when decisions were being made. That should not happen. It shouldn't happen. But that is a matter that those who run cabinet and our party leaders are aware of. I believe it should not happen for precisely the reason you've just put to me there.
See, it's an offence, isn't it, to leak information from
a
cabinet
it is.
Meeting? So if you have somebody sitting there thinking, I've spotted something here that's going to stir up trouble for this government or for my party, and they decide that the right thing for them to do is to leak that to a journalist, that must be hugely problematic for you.
Which is why it shouldn't happen.
But it did happen.
And it shouldn't happen. And it is behaviour. If I look at all of the issues that the government has had to deal with, if I look at the progress that we have made and tried to make on the many challenges our country is confronting, any of us who are in government, that should be our sole focus. Mm-hmm.
But then we see we have to ask questions about whether there's distrust amongst those at the highest level in Fine Gael, because we know from Miriam Lord's report that somebody then within the Fine Gael party tried to find out who this person was.
And maybe there are questions that and issues that I know are there and that the party leader, those who are involved in running our government, I'm sure we'll respond back to at the appropriate time. All I can reiterate is my expectation regarding the standards that should be met in cabinet.
See, much has been made about Leo Varadkar and the investigation into the leaking of the GP contract. Arguably, this is more serious because it's an offence.
This is a really important question, which is why I'm giving the same important answer to us. It shouldn't happen. Government, if you have the privilege of being in cabinet, and it is such a privilege to be in cabinet, your focus should be on the decisions that you are making. And if this did happen, it should not have happened. And then it would be up to the Taoiseach, those who are involved in leading or running our parties, to deal with that matter. I couldn't be more unambiguous in my expectation that this shouldn't take place.
And just going back to the event in the Merrion Hotel itself, and I know it has been well rehearsed, but just listening to the Taoiseach again last night saying the image of people lining the roads when funerals were occurring around the country, and he said that image will never leave him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if government or ministers or people who attended that event understand the impact that it had on the people who watched those people lining the routes of roads around the country over the last 18 months?
We do. I have the feelings that you're talking about, the anxiety, the frustration, the hurt, and the trauma that our country has gone through are felt as keenly by me as they are by any others. I've had the responsibility of helping lead our country through the most extraordinary challenge that we have faced. And in doing that, my awareness of what those decisions have meant to those who've had to abide to them is at a really, really high level. And the Tánaiste has already come out and acknowledged what happened in the Merrion and expressed his regret for that.
All right,
But this kind of inference or maybe suggestion that we are not aware of the anger and hurt that many people have felt and the trauma that we've gone through collectively just because we're in government making decisions is one I just want to make the case for joining it all up.
That's fine to say that, and I accept you saying that, but in going to the event, perhaps there was a lack of judgment there.
But indeed, Claire, I mean, you know, for example, an event happened here in RTE, which RTE had to deal with and come out and answer for and make points in relation to. We have all gone through a very, very demanding experience. As we've gone through the demanding experience.
And I think that if that event, in fairness, was investigated. I wasn't there, so, you know, I can't add to that, but I think it was fully investigated.
But there is a particular, and there is a particular responsibility of those, for those of us in government, to be aware of our decisions and the consequences of them. And as we've gone through this awful event, the awful sequence of this disease and the effect that it's had in our country, of course we're aware that we haven't always got everything right, and even personal decisions that we've made at times have not always been right. And when those decisions are made, we've come out unacknowledged.
Okay. Minister, thank you very much for coming
in.
Minister Pascal Donoghue. Coming up next, should the GAA allow more people into Croke Park for the football final? We'll be talking about that after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.